This is Dina Weiss on Parashat Vayechi, Kind to be Cruel. This week, we conclude the book of Bereishit with the death of Yaakov. Midrashic tradition teaches that Yaakov prayed to become ill before he died, so that he would know that his end was approaching and could put his affairs in order. And indeed, as Yaakov sees that the time has come, he summons his grandchildren and his sons to bless them and guide them before it is too late. Yet the brachot, the blessings that Yaakov bestows on his three eldest sons, are not particularly encouraging or uplifting. Instead of praising them and promising them bright futures, he uses this opportunity to rebuke them. He excoriates Reuven for his hot-headedness and sexual improprieties. He condemns Shimon and Levi for their violent natures and says that he does not want to be associated with them in the afterlife. Why does Yaakov spend his final moments in this way? Why does he beg heaven for the opportunity to bless them and then appear to do just the opposite? In order to understand why Yaakov chooses this path of straightforwardness almost to the point of cruelty, it's helpful to look at Yosef, who chooses to do the opposite. When Yosef first reveals himself to his brothers, he does not acknowledge that they have done anything wrong to him. Then Yosef said to his brothers, "Come closer to me." And they came closer. He said, "I am your brother, Yosef, whom you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors." All of Yosef's kindness to his brothers, which should indicate that he holds no animosity towards them, does not comfort the brothers at all. They don't trust this generosity, and they don't believe that Yosef is reconciled to them. In fact, they fear that he has only been kind to them for the sake of their father, and that as soon as their father dies, Yosef will retaliate against them. Yosef's brothers saw that their father died, and they said, "Perhaps Yosef will bear animosity toward us, lu yisteminu Yosef, and return to us all of the evil that we did to him." The turn of phrase that the brothers employ, lu yisteminu Yosef, perhaps Yosef will bear animosity towards us, is unusual. Lu usually translates as "if only," and precedes something that the speaker wants to happen. Yet in this verse, the brothers use the term lu to preface something negative, that they do not want to happen to them, i.e., that Yosef will pay them back with what they deserve. The Malbim, however, notices this unusual terminology and reads it in its plain sense. The Malbim suggests that the brothers do, in fact, want Yosef to deal unkindly with them. They said, "Perhaps Yosef will bear animosity towards us." Regarding that which the wise one said, "If your enemy is hungry, feed him bread," that the greatest revenge one can take upon his enemy is to repay his hatred, is by placing him among those who sit at the table of the aggrieved, and to do only goodness and kindness to him. For then he will constantly remember what he had done wrong. And that is why the next verse says, "For you are stoking coals on his head." And Yosef's brothers sensed this, and the goodness of Yosef was like he was stoking coals on their heads. So they said, "If only Yosef would clearly bear animosity towards us, and if so, he will return to us all of the evil that we have done to him. Let him be actively bad to us, and not kind, which is like being stabbed with a sword." According to the Malbim, nothing made the brothers suffer more than Yosef's unwillingness to make them suffer. Just as before, they hated his holier-than-thou attitude. Nothing was harder for them than his insistence on being somehow more than human. by refusing to yell at them for what they did or make them pay. They wanted to be Yosef's slaves since they sold him into slavery. And it was complete torture for them to be guests at his table and to benefit from his largesse. The psychological torment that they suffered was too hard for them. They would have been happy to attempt to pay back the debt in any way. What was unbearable to them was the feeling that they couldn't even be punished. Reb Tzadok HaKohen unflinchingly articulates the psychological torment of this kind of regret. The distress that a person feels over the sins which he has done are actually the pangs of hell for that sin. Therefore, they said that one who is ashamed of it is forgiven, for he already suffered the punishment of hell. And one who is meritorious is constantly reminded of the sins he did and ruminates about them until he suffers in this world the portion of hell that was due to him. And this is the payment extracted from the tzaddikim in this world. Hell is where you go when there is no option for redemption, when there is nothing that you can do to right the wrong. Regret and self-recrimination is strongest when there is nothing constructive that is left to be done. Therefore, according to Reb Tzadok, regret is hell. While Yosef may have thought that he was doing right by his brothers, with his unflappable positivity and his lack of acknowledgement of how they wronged him, he was leaving them to the psychological torture of thoughts of guilt without reprieve. Yosef doesn't say that he is angry. Yosef doesn't say that the brothers owe him for his years of suffering. Yosef is completely impassive and completely blank. And this has a negative and almost maddening effect on his brothers. This may explain why Yaakov chose to be harsh, but honest, with his children before he departed from this world. Yaakov models the alternative approach, that is, to be lovingly straightforward. Yaakov doesn't pull any punches. He tells it like it is. And by airing his grievances, he allows his children to confront what they've done, learn from what they've done, and move beyond a secret and unrelenting sense of guilt. After Yaakov's death, his children put words into his mouth and beg Yosef to have compassion on them in their father's name. So they enjoined Yosef, saying, "Your father commanded before his death, saying, 'So you shall say to Yosef, please forgive the crime of your brothers and their sins, for they have done wrong to you. And now forgive the sin of the servants of the God of your father.' And Yosef wept as they spoke to him. And also his brothers went and fell before him. And they said, 'We are here to be your slaves.'" When Yosef hears his brothers beg for forgiveness in such an abject way, he realizes that even if his own wounds have healed, his brothers have not yet been able to move on themselves. He understands that they don't trust his kindness, and he follows in his father's footsteps by including some acknowledgement of the hurt they caused him. Yosef said to them, "Do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to harm me, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people, as he is doing today. Now, do not fear. I will provide for you and your little ones." In this way, he comforted them and spoke to their hearts. What comforts the brothers here is not only that Yosef tells them that they have no reason to fear and that he will provide for them. He had already promised them protection before. What makes this time different, what makes his statement believable, is that he finally acknowledges that they have done something wrong when he says, "You intended to harm me." He betrays some hurt, and that amount of truth lends more credence to his words. The Midrash in Bereishit Rabbah underscores this idea that the guilty need no accuser, and the guilty mind can blow even the most innocent of gestures out of proportion. Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak, This is a dispute between Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Levi said the brothers thought that Yosef was still angry at them because he didn't invite them to a meal. Rabbi Yitzchak says that the brothers thought he was still angry because Yosef went and looked into that pit. According to this midrash, the brothers were hypersensitive to indications that Yosef was angry because he never said that he was angry once and is angry no longer. The brothers justifiably assumed that he was still fuming. According to Rabbi Levi, they read into his neglecting to invite them to a meal. According to Rabbi Yitzchak, when they went back to Canaan to bury their father, they passed the pit where Yosef had been cast, and the brothers saw him looking at it. While Rabbi Levi and Rabbi Yitzchak disagree about what the trigger was, they both understand that Yosef's nonchalance and placid demeanor was unconvincing. Because there was a lack of overt communication, his brothers looked for subtle hints that Yosef was angry, and their fears spoke louder than Yosef's words. It can be difficult to be honest. It can feel terrible to say to someone else, "You have wronged me." The lesson of this week's parasha is that these difficult conversations are often better than the alternative, silence. Silence is a breeding ground for overactive imaginations, for harmful assumptions and projections, and for even deeper hurt. If someone apologizes to you for a real wrong, avoid saying, "It was nothing." Instead, say, "Yes, what you did was wrong and really hurt my feelings, but your apology is enough, and I'm happy to move past this together." Yosef's brothers demonstrate how hard it is to forget, but Yosef himself teaches that it is possible to forgive. The dynamic between them indicates that the key to reconciliation is this open communication. As Yaakov showed, sometimes a harsh word is in fact a blessing. Wishing you a Shabbat of clear communication. Shabbat Shalom.